Oh, you're going to?
Yeah, I thought about it. And then they said, when you do that, you're gonna have, you'll have cataract will form.
Oh.
And then you'll have to have cataract surgery.
Yeah, that's no big deal. Well, how do you see? Do you wear a contact or?
No, no.
You don't have any correction?
I have nothing, no.
That's amazing.
I just guess at words sometimes. He doesn't know what he's looking at. I don't know if it's gradually worse. He says the quicker you do it, the better. You don't have to, but you're younger. And if you wait 5, 10
years. We're going live, Galen.
We're live, okay.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're continuing in our framework book. It's going to be pages 140 to 153 tonight. It's from the years 539 BC to 323 BC. Basically, it's going to be the Persian Empire. It's going to take over the Babylonian Empire. And then we're going to have the time of the Persians. It's going to include several books. I would love to take time and read through all the material and actually do like a Bible class where I read through, you know, Ezra, Nehemiah, but we've done that, and we'll do it again sometime. The prophet Haggai, Daniel's prophecies are going to continue. Daniel's still alive. Esther's going to come up in this time period. And then at the end of the Persian Empire, some of the last kings like Xerxes and Darius and Xerxes are going to attack, try and expand up into Greece. They're going to go into Macedonia and Philippi and have some battles there. And they're going to get beat. And that's going to set the stage for a king named Philip who's going to come out of Macedonia and conquer Greece. And his son, he's going to die because he's going to be assassinated because Philip wants to go into Persia, go back into the east and conquer Persia. And some people politically, that's not a good idea. So like he gets shot, you know, like Kennedy got shot because he wanted to end the Vietnam War. Well, this guy gets shot because he wants to go into Persia. But that leaves his young son, Alexander, takes over. And Alexander says, yes, we are. And Alexander is going to march into Persia and defeat the Persians. And so we'll end up with the death of Alexander the Great around 323. And then his kingdom's going to be, he's now controlling the Babylonian, Persian, Assyrian empire plus Greece. And by that time, we're out of Bible. We're no longer in the Old Testament. We're moving towards the New Testament. And so we're going to eventually run out of Bible verses. And again, I apologize for not reading verse by verse to you tonight, but that's where we're at. The first thing we've got right here, I want you to see these two verses, though, Jeremiah 25:11-12 and Jeremiah 29:10. Jeremiah is going to say, when we were talking about Jeremiah during, the Nebuchadnezzar was reigning and the Babylonian Empire, Assyria had fallen, Babylon had taken over. Jeremiah, God had spoke through Jeremiah, this whole land, talking about Israel or Judea, shall become a ruin and a waste, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Then after 70 years are completed, I, talk about the Lord, will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, and that's what Persia is going to overthrow, that's the Belshazzar party. And that nation, the land of the Chaldeans, for their iniquity, declares the Lord, making the land an everlasting waste, I'll bring upon the land the words that I have uttered against everything written in this book, which Jeremiah has prophesied against the nations. 70 years. And same thing, the chapter 29, verse 10, for thus says the Lord, when 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will visit you and I will fulfill to you my promise to bring you back. And so there's this hanging over all these prophecies is going to be 70 years. And there's going to be several ways to count these years. There's going to be the 605 captivity, and then you subtract 70 years from that. There's going to be the 597 captivity, and then there's going to be the 586 captivity. These two work very nice. When you subtract 70 years from 586, you get 516. And that's the year the temple was completed, being rebuilt in some books we haven't got to. You subtract 70 years from 605 minus 70. Here's 5. I've got it coming. Is that 53? 535. And if you count 605 and 535, you get the years, and it ends up being 538 is when Cyrus begins to rule and reign, and then he sends the people back after, we've got it right here, the Cyrus cylinder. And so there's 70 years. He sends them back into the land after 70 years, and after the temple is destroyed in 586, it's rebuilt by 516. So after the captivity, the first captivity when Daniel goes, the people come back after 70 years, but the temple is not rebuilt until 70 years after it was burned. And so that's two ways of looking at that. And again, it was something the people were counting on taking place. Whoops, got my phone upside down. Here we go. Let's see if I do this right. Here is the captivities we talked about, 605, 597, 586. We talked about this last week, and that is Judah's in captivity. Here's a chart from our Tuesday night class. And this is interesting just to kind of review this. I hope this helps you or is useful. All right. I'm not sure if I should try to make it larger. But here's 559, 539 right here. This is when Persia is going to take over. And then you're going to have Cyrus. And that's going to be followed by Cambyses, Darius I, Xerxes, and then Artaxerxes. These are the kings of Persia that are going to be ruling and reigning. Remember, Daniel is here in the Babylonian Empire with Nebuchadnezzar. He's going to serve Cyrus. He's going to serve all the way up into this time period here. And then during this time, you're going to have the book of Haggai takes place here, Zechariah, Ezra. You're going to take place, Esther is taking place right here. Esther's going to actually marry Xerxes the first. And then when he's dead, or Artaxerxes, she'll still be the queen mother during Artaxerxes' time. She said that she's not the mother of Artaxerxes, but she'd be the queen mother. And so during this time, Nehemiah, you know the book of Nehemiah, he is going to be the cupbearer for Artaxerxes. So you've got Nehemiah and Esther were in the same palace in Persia. Malachi is going to be written at this time, and Ezra is coming and going from this time period and all that. And then by this time, now the Bible's closing down, and you're into the Greek time period. Here is some time periods again: 605 captivity, 537 Zerubbabel is going to return when Cyrus makes the decree that they can go back. As Isaiah prophesied, he'll send them back, even uses his name. And Zerubbabel comes back. He's a son of David. He's in the royal line. He returns in 537, but the Samaritans don't want them building the temple. They don't want them back. Just like, you know, we don't want, you know, illegal immigrants coming in and moving into our land. The Samaritans thought that was their territory. And so when the Jews came back to their land, the Samaritans kind of were like, well, we're kind of using this. And so there was opposition from that. And so they scared them and they stopped building the temple. And then Ezra's going to come and they're going to rebuild it, and then Ezra's going to rebuild or read the law here in 558, and 545, Nehemiah finds out someone comes and visits over in Persepolis in Persia, where Nehemiah is serving the wine. And when we talk about Nehemiah being a cupbearer, that doesn't just mean that he's a waiter in the palace. He's probably an interpreter. He's probably a dignitary that negotiates and talks with other nations when they come to Artaxerxes. And so he's an ambassador that can speak different languages and is in charge of the palace. And so he asks someone, how are things going in Jerusalem? They say, not well. The walls, we've got the temple finally got built, but there's no wall. And so we're always getting raided. So he says, we need to go back and build the wall. He asks Artaxerxes for permission to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the wall. And Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, gives him a break. Gives him, it actually ends up being 12 years. And then after 12 years, Nehemiah returns to the court of Artaxerxes in Persia to finish up his time. And then the book of Nehemiah, or Malachi, is written right here. And we're at the end, 432, we're at the end of the Old Testament. And so there's some things we're going to be looking at today, tonight. This goes back, we're on page 140 in your books here. This is, again, a brief review, please, a brief review. We talked about this, and this is 592. There's already had the second captivity. Ezekiel is seeing the vision in 592 of the glory of God. Now, Ezekiel is in Babylon in 592. He's been taken captive in the second Babylonian captivity. But while he's down by the river working at the factories that Nebuchadnezzar has, he sees the glory of God come in. This is the thing that everyone remembers Nehemiah, the wheel within the wheel, and the glory of God, and a man sitting on the chariot in heaven, which would be the second member of the Trinity, which is going to eventually become a man of flesh on the earth, Jesus. But he's in the chariot, and he sees the glory. But in chapter 8, 9, and 10, he is taken back to Jerusalem in a vision, and it's a great set of verses. He sees the glory of God rise from the Ark of the Covenant, come out to the threshold of the temple, and then interact with some angels and some other individuals, and then leaves the temple. And leaves the temple, comes out on this side, and then goes and moves east to the Mount of Olives, and is gone. That's the same way Jesus is going to come back to the Mount of Olives and re-enter the temple. So the glory of God leaves in 592 in a vision. Nebuchadnezzar's attacking Judah in 589, but Pharaoh Hophra promises to come up and help. And so Zedekiah revolts against him and won't cooperate. And then Nebuchadnezzar begins the final siege in 588. By 586, the city is going to fall. During 587, it says right here, Nehemiah is in a vaulted dungeon. Nehemiah is in the courtyard in prison. He is promised that he'll be restored. The land will be restored. Zedekiah, the king, sends for Jeremiah, and then Jeremiah doesn't say what he wants him to say, and he throws him into a cistern. 586, Nehemiah and Nebuchadnezzar had to take a break because this is all taking place because Nebuchadnezzar had to leave and go fight the Egyptians. They're subdued. He returns and finishes off Jerusalem. In August 14th of 586, Nebuzaradan, the general, returns after they breached the wall and started taking captive. He returns and burns the city of Jerusalem. That leads Jeremiah, who's still there, to write the book of Lamentations. Now, this is amazing. It's in the Bible, and people don't know this. But Nebuzaradan, after he's gone through the captives, he starts going through the captives and looking for Jeremiah. And he finds Jeremiah, who's been taken captive, because he knows who Jeremiah is. He's in something like he's a political figure. He's a spokesperson. He's a prophet of God. He's not just this guy obsolete. No one knows who he is. He's a prophet to the nations. God told him that. And so Nebuzaradan finds him and then offers Jeremiah. He says, "What do you want?" Nebuchadnezzar says, "You can stay here." Or you can come back with him to Babylon and be his guest in Babylon. So Nebuchadnezzar, through Nebuzaradan, the one who burnt the temple and the city and was leading the military, invites Jeremiah to come back into Babylon. And what would he do with him there? Well, he's already got Daniel there. He's got Ezekiel there. He'll just be a guest. And Jeremiah decides to stay in the land of Judah. And then they appoint the Babylonians appoint Gedaliah, a Jewish man, to be the governor. He's going to be the king, the ruler under Nebuchadnezzar and rule. The people are going into captivity, but some people are staying behind. The poor people are staying behind. And Jeremiah decides to stay and work with Gedaliah. Well, on October 7th, Gedaliah is assassinated. Who's not doing the thinking here? He's actually assassinated by an Ammonite. And then the people, they flee to Egypt, and they take Nebuchadnezzar or Jeremiah with them. 570, that is when Nebuchadnezzar is going to have a dream of the tree. He sees a great tree. All the animals are in the branches and in the shade of the tree. But all of a sudden, that great tree is cut down. And he calls Daniel and says, "What does this mean?" And Daniel says, Daniel is right there working with Nebuchadnezzar. He doesn't let him out of prison. He doesn't, take him out of, some chains. He's right there working in the palace. He's probably helping rule the country. I think he's helping rule the country. The Bible does not say that, but understand this. He interprets the dream and says, I wish this meant something for your enemies and not for you, O Nebuchadnezzar. But he says, what the Lord has said is you're going to go and you'll be unable to think, unable to function, in these types of words, for 7 years. You'll go insane. You're going to have a time. And for 7 years, but after 7 years, you will be restored. And so there's even a cuneiform tablet with a story similar to this. The details don't match up exactly, but the king goes insane, and then after 7 years in the Bible, he looks up to heaven and repents, and his mind is restored to him, and he returns to his throne. And his kingdom has been in function. Listen, Nebuchadnezzar was not running his country for 7 years. He went Biden for 7 years. Just he didn't know. They had the auto pen or something, but they probably who was running the country, again, this is speculation here, Daniel could have been running the country, just making sure everything's taken care of and running. And Nebuchadnezzar, after 7 years, looks up to heaven, repents, and God brings him back to the throne, and then he dies that same year because he's an old man. But he died, we would assume, in fellowship with God. Now, here's one of the dreams that he'd had earlier that Daniel interpreted when there was the head of gold, the chest of silver, the waist of bronze, the legs of iron, the feet of clay. And this is talking about four empires that are going to come. The head gold was $870 an ounce, silver $16 an ounce, bronze $1.45, legs, iron was pennies, and the feet, iron and clay, is basically worthless. And it portrays, and this is important to get your mind wrapped around this right now, and again, I'd love to teach it to you in detail, but these are going to be kingdoms that are coming. Daniel says, you, O king, are that head, the Babylonian Empire. But after you is going to come an empire that's going to not be as strong as you or as great as you, and that's the Persian. Following them will be the Greeks. And then after the Greeks, he doesn't give names for these. He just says there's going to be another empire coming. And the chest of silver is the Persians. The waist, a short kingdom, is the Greeks, made out of the bronze. And after the Greeks, the Romans come, and the legs are made out of iron. And it's interesting because there's two legs. And that this extends, understand, this prophecy is not just taking place, talking about 605 to, you know, the Greeks in 331 or something. This starts from Nebuchadnezzar's time and covers history all the way until the end of time. And so once these legs hit, if you accept this as it is, once the Roman Empire hits and they come off of the waist, you've got a right and a left, or an east and a west, and that becomes the Roman Empire. And you've got today, yet, you've still got the Eastern Roman Empire. You've got the Orthodox Christian Church, for example, in the east, and you've got the Roman Catholic Church in the west. And that's what we're part of. You say, no, I'm a Protestant. Right, but you protested against the Roman Catholic. You're a rebel against the Roman. That's why you're a Protestant. You're rebelling against the Roman Catholic Church, which is the right side or the west side of the Roman Empire. And so again, I'm not Catholic, but historically we're not Greek. We didn't rebel against the Greek Orthodox. We rebelled against, and it wasn't me. I just was born, I was born Presbyterian. I was sprinkled. I don't remember that. I was an infant. But anyway, that's the Iron Lakes, the Roman Empire. And then, but listen, after that is going to come the feet, which are 10 toes, and it points it out, and iron and clay, and whole thing's going to collapse. This is kind of what we are waiting for. We're waiting for the five toes in the east, five toes in the right, or the Eastern Empire and the Western Empire, and they're going to come together under potentially the Antichrist, and that'll be the final form of the kingdom. And again, people think we're in that time now. We don't know details of eschatology. That's another whole story. But that day is coming, yet in the future. I think we're close, but people thought they were close for, I think we've been close since the 70s. Anyway, that's a vision that Daniel saw, a dream that he had. Now, in 569, Nebuchadnezzar invades Egypt. And then between 569 and 563, Nebuchadnezzar is in exile. Those are the 7 years that are missing that he was gone. He was insane, basically. He recovers in 562. In August, Nebuchadnezzar repents and glorifies God. By September, he dies after having humbled himself. And that now you've got evil Marduk. Would be his son-in-law or his son. He releases Jehoiachin from prison. He's 55 years old. He's been in prison for 36 years. Jehoiachin, the king of Judah. If Jeremiah was alive, he would be 88 years old at this time. 559, Cyrus of the Persians is reigning, and Evil-Marduk is assassinated in Babylon. So now we introduce Cyrus. He's coming. This is his cylinder. This is, I do not have the original. It's in the British Museum, and it's not that small. It's a little, it's bigger, like this big. So Cyrus is now in play. He's active. 556, Nebuchadnezzar's son-in-law, Nabonidus. We talked about this last week. Nabonidus, who'd married Nitocris, Nebuchadnezzar's daughter, and had a son named Belshazzar, is reigning in 556. This continues. Daniel chapter 7 is here, and that's the four beasts that Daniel has in Daniel chapter 7. If we want to look at that real quickly, I'm going to go to Daniel and show you this. Daniel chapter 7, Daniel's vision of the four beasts in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Okay, you understand that? So Nebuchadnezzar has died. There's been a couple. Evil Marduk comes in. He's assassinated. That guy only lasts a couple months. And then his son-in-law, Nabonidus, begins the rule and reign with his daughter, Nitocris. They have a son named Belshazzar. Belshazzar is going to start ruling right around 552, right in here. And it says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel declared, I saw in my vision it by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven were stirring up the great sea. Sea usually refers to nations. The four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings, and it looked like its wings had been plucked off. That referred to Babylon. And it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and the mind of a man was given to it. And that would be Nebuchadnezzar's recovery. And behold, another beast, the second one, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, arise, devour much flesh. And this looked, and behold, and so in other words, you've got the bear coming. That would be Persia. And it's got three ribs. Those are the empires it destroyed, going after Babylon. After, and again, that has not happened yet. That's about to begin to take place at this time in history, as Daniel's had this vision. After this, I looked, and behold, another like a leopard with four wings of a bird on its back, meaning it moves like a bird. It's a leopard is fast, but if you update it or upgrade it to four wings, it's really fast. And you're going to see in a moment Alexander the Great moving with great speed across the map. And with four wings like the bird on its back. And the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. And after this, I saw in the night vision, behold, a fourth beast, terrifying. Now again, that leopard had four heads, which means if you can push it into the prophet, in the history, Alexander, the leopard, is going to die, and his kingdom is going to be divided into four. He's going to be Cassander's, Ptolemy, Seleucid, Antigonus. We'll see that map. They're going to be divided. So there's four heads coming off of that into the Greek Empire. After that, I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful, exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. This is Rome. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from the beast that were before it, and it had 10 horns. It was different because it's going to continue for a long time, and then it's going to morph into the final kingdom, and it's going to have 10 horns, just like the image had 10 toes. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them one, a little one, the little horn, before which three of the first horns were plucked up. So one kingdom is going to take out three of the 10 kingdoms. He saw this, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Again, then he goes on and says, as I looked, I want to stop reading. I don't want to stop reading. I need to. It says, thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. So now you've got the Ancient of Days, who's keep reading. He's going to be called the Son of Man, who's going to be coming in the clouds of glory, is going to come after that kingdom. And Daniel's seeing all of that. Now, does Daniel understand that? I would say he understands it more than I understand it, but I'm now 2,000 years into the future, and you can look back and you can identify some of these things, and yet some of that stuff hasn't been fulfilled. So nonetheless, that's what's taking place right here in Daniel chapter 7. 551, Daniel has a vision of a ram. Daniel chapter 8, I could read that to you again. And there is a ram, and coming from the west is this goat, and he with two horns, and he hits the ram and shatters the ram. And that is, again, right here, I just got it written down here. Daniel has a vision of the ram Persia, King Darius, of 330 BC, and a goat, Alexander the Great of Greece. These events will take place 220 years in the future. And that's where he tramples and nothing is left of the ram. That's going to be fulfilled. That's Daniel chapter 8. 549, Cyrus captures the king of the Medes. So remember, it's always the Persians and the Medes. Well, Persia captures the king of the Medes. And then they unite the kingdoms together. And Darius begins to rule under Cyrus for the Medes. So you've got now Cyrus the Persian ruling. And he's now conquered the Medes, and he puts Darius as the king of the Medes, and the two of them become a unified empire. It's the kingdom of, we just say Persia, but it's the Persians and the Medes. That's the kingdom, and that's 549, and now they're going to continue. This is the bear. The bear is forming, and he's going to have three ribs in its mouth. He's going to be taking out powers, and that's going to be taking place. Now, that's 546. Cyrus defeats Croesus, the fabulous wealthy king of Lydia. That's where you get the story of Midas Touch. 539, September 539, Cyrus defeats Babylon at Opis and Sippara. Those are two cities. The only thing separating Cyrus and Darius, from the Babylonians, is the double wall of the city of Babylon, where Belshazzar's on the inside with Daniel and his mother, Nitocris. On October 12th, Belshazzar, what do you do if you're walled up behind a double wall and nothing to do except, you know, you've lost your entire empire? Well, you have a party. Has a drunken feast when the Lord writes on the plaster on the banquet hall, he writes, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parson. Belshazzar's mother, Nitocris, hears the noise and enters the banquet and suggests that Belshazzar send for a man named Daniel. I think Daniel can probably handle this. I've seen him unravel mysteries for my father when I was a little girl. Daniel interprets the writing to mean, God has numbered your days, you have been weighed on the scales, and your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. The Persian military, under the leadership of Darius is the general for that military at that time, under Darius, where am I at? Under Darius, enters the Babylon that night, killing Belshazzar and taking over the city. And of course, he inherits Daniel. October 29th, Cyrus enters Babylon himself. Cyrus, the king, enters Babylon himself and receives a visit from Gabriel. Enters Babylon himself. Cyrus presented as a gracious liberator. Now, this is the Bible and history. He is going to undo everything the Assyrians did, the Babylonians did. He's going to unravel all of that, and by sending the captive people back to their homelands. Daniel now is 84 years old, and he's going to see all the captives that had come after him are now going to be sent back. And that is right here on the Cyrus cylinder. This is a replica of it, but right on there it says that very thing. Again, I can't tell you where it's at. It's written in cuneiform writing. And that's a replica of it. I've got a picture coming up. But that's what the book of Daniel says. That's what Chronicles says. And that's what Persian documents say, the same thing.
There's the Cyrus seal. Got a replica of that on my desk at home. Sending the captives back home to rebuild their countries. And right here's Artaxerxes, silver bowl, a wine bowl of Artaxerxes, could be used by Nehemiah when he served him the wine. That's a silver wine bowl.
Daniel prays in chapter 9 and receives a vision from Gabriel explaining the 77s. He says, there are seven sevens appointed to you from the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. He said, I'm going to tell you something, Daniel. From the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, there's going to be 70 sevens. Now, what that means is, that means there's going to be 490 years. From the issuing of the decree, there's going to be an official document that they're going to sign it, they're going to inscribe it, that's going to say, Jerusalem, from the issuing of the decree for the restoration of Jerusalem, there's from that date, there's going to be 490 years until the Messiah comes. So he's setting dates. He knows when it's taking place from the issuing of the decree. And he's told that by Gabriel in Daniel chapter 9, verse 24. Daniel then, we don't know this for sure. Cyrus may have just had this attitude himself of sending everybody back. But written in the book of Isaiah, chapter 41, verses 2 through 7, and 44, verse 28, and 45, verse 1, Isaiah wrote this in 700 B.C. Okay, are you ready? Chapter 44 says, again, I could read the whole thing. I've just got it written right here. Who says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and he shall be faithful all my purposes, saying of Jerusalem, she shall be built, and of the temple your foundation shall be laid. And Daniel could have took the book of Isaiah and says, Isaiah, this was written 100 years before I got here. Isaiah, one of our great prophets, says Cyrus is going to say, go rebuild Jerusalem and rebuild the foundation of the temple, or let it be done. And at chapter 45, verse 1, thus says the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have grasped, to subdue nations before him and to loose the belts of kings. So that's written down in the book of Isaiah. It does not say Daniel showed it to him. We know that Daniel's serving him, Daniel's working with him, Daniel's going to have conversations with him, but you wonder how much influence Daniel has. Nonetheless, that's what Isaiah says. This is where Daniel's at. This is the vision Daniel's had, and that is the year 539 where the Persians have taken over. 538, the first year, Darius, then his first year, because Darius is going to stay back. Darius is going to, in a sense, be the king of Babylon under Cyrus. Cyrus is the king of the empire, the king of kings. Darius is the king of Babylon under Cyrus. You know, he's the king of the Medes ruling Babylon. And the first thing he's going to do, he's going to appoint 120 satraps, which are going to be leaders of the kingdom, and three administrators over the 120 satraps. One of the three administrators is Daniel. And this is, sets up the story of Daniel chapter 6, where they make a decree that everyone is going to not pray. The people are jealous of Daniel. The leaders, other leaders are jealous of Daniel, and Daniel always prays to his God. He's been praying to his God for this. He's been there since 605, and we're in the year 538, so do the math. But he's some 80 years old. And so he's praying, and the book of Daniel records this. He says to Darius, Darius, you are so great, the Mede, who's king of Babylon, under Cyrus, the king of kings, you're so great that we think it'd be a great idea if we just passed a law, just for 30 days, that no one can pray to any of their gods except you, that you can only pray to you. Darius says, well, guys, yeah, that's quite an honor that I'd be the only one that they'd pray to, and you're like deifying me. They said, yes, sir, we're so happy that you're here ruling our kingdom. And all of us satraps, we think that's the way idea. Well, they know good and well Daniel, who's not cooperating at all. He's following all the laws. He's doing a great job of performance. But he won't play their woke game. He won't admit. We just want everyone just to say we don't know really what a gender is. That there's many genders. All for 30 days. We just want everyone to get up every morning and say we don't know what a woman is. And there are many genders. Oh, well, sure. I mean, we want to be inclusive. So Darius, I'm paraphrasing the story and adding some details that are not historically accurate, but you can maybe relate to it. Well, he signs it, and it comes down and says, Daniel, did you see the decree? Did you get the email? You got to say every morning that there you don't know what a woman is and that there are many genders. And Daniel says, well, that's not true. I'm not going to say something that's not true. Well, you got to. And the penalty, let's see, what is the penalty? If you get thrown into the lion's den if you don't say it. Well, Daniel gets up very next thing, the next morning, he looks out his window and says, a woman, how would you define a woman? I mean, I'm so confused. Gives birth? What?
Chromosome.
What is it? Two Y chromosomes? X and a Y. Okay, I've got two Y chromosomes. I have two X. Who's got two Y chromosomes?
Nobody.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, Daniel gets up and says, a woman has an X and a Y chromosome, and there's only two genders. God made two genders in the book of Genesis. And it's like, they go into Darius. Daniel's not praying to you, or he's not saying our talking points. And Darius is like, what? Oh, no. And he says, well, you signed it. He said, and one of the rules is you can't change the rules. You can't change the law. And so Darius doesn't want to, but he's got to because of the peer pressure. He's got to throw Daniel in the lion's den, and he's there all night. And Darius, of course, as you know, gets up the next morning and goes then checks and says, Daniel, was your God able to save you? And Daniel says, yes, I'm fine. The Lord closed the lion's mouth, and they bring him up. And Darius says, throw those other guys in there. And the lions grabbed them on the way down and ate them. And that's in Daniel chapter 6. So that's happening in 538. Now understand, Daniel was in Judah, in Jerusalem, as one of the royal children during the days of when the kings were ruling. He got taken captive when Jehoahaz got taken after Josiah died. So he would have known, you know, Josiah, possibly. And then now he was there in Babylon the whole time of Nebuchadnezzar's reign and all of his kings, including his grandson. And now he's with the Persians and he's been recognized. Now, Ezra chapter 1. Now we begin the book of Ezra right here. Ezra chapter 1 takes place, and if I looked up there, right there, Ezra is going to start recording the ideal of the people start coming back. Now, the people are going to come back to Jerusalem, the captives, and Zerubbabel is going to come back to be their governor. He's a royal line. But halfway through, they're going to send someone over there to start rebuilding the city and the temple. And Ezra's going to be part of that, and Ezra's going to be bringing the law. And all that's in detail in the book of Ezra. So Ezra chapter 1, there, that's from the British Museum. That is the Cyrus, that's the actual Cyrus cylinder. Now, it's not that big either. It's somewhere between little and gigantic. It's, you know, from what I remember, it's about like this. I've got videotape. You can see the person's hand, but that's not clear either because it's perspective. Persia, the years... Persia's going to, this is just the years. They're going to go up until Alexander knocks them out. But 538 to 445, you've got Ezra chapter 1, 1 through 6 provides a general historical background for the books. Ezra chapter 1, there's the Edict of Cyrus in 538. This right here, Ezra chapter 1 records this, which is in the British Museum, recorded by the Persians, which says the people can go back. Chapter 3, the building of the new altar and the foundation of the temple in 537 under Shazbazar, Zerubbabel, and Jeshua. Jeshua would be the priest. And so they're going to build a new altar in Jerusalem. They're back on the Temple Mound, putting up a new altar. So all this is going to start taking place right up there in that picture. They're going to lay the foundation stone. They're going to start laying the foundation. So they've started rebuilding the temple. They're not going to get very far. That's chapter 4. Chapter 3. Chapter 4, the Samaritans find out about this, and they resist the Jewish building effort. They're going to be sending in, you know, terrorists and protesters, and they're burning cars and, you know, robbing gas stations and stuff. And the Samaritan and the Jews are like, it's just, we can't do it. It's just too hard. The Persian kings now during this time is Cyrus, Cambyses, Darius, Artaxerxes, Darius II, Artaxerxes II, Darius III. Then Ezra chapter 4, the second attempt to rebuild the temple begins under Darius in 516. Ezra chapter 7 through Nehemiah chapter 13 inform about the activities of Ezra and Nehemiah. So Ezra chapter 7 and Nehemiah 13 talk about that. Ezra 7, there's your dates, 458, all the way, here's your dates of Ezra. And this is very fun to get all the details right here. We have great detail. But anyway, the reason they're going to restart building the temple in 516 is because they get a decree. They find a decree of Cyrus saying that they could build it. It got lost in the records, and the Samaritans have been telling them, you can't do this. And then they send someone over there, and they find the record, an old document that says you can build the temple. And they pull that out, publish it, and they have now Persian permission to build it. There's the Persian Empire. It's a map I made a long time ago. That's the Persian Empire. We don't have time to go details. But look how big it is. That's the border of India. and it's coming up over here. And right here is Macedonia and Greece, going to be important in our story in a little bit. They come all the way down. They control Egypt, Jerusalem, Euphrates, Tigris. They're Ecbatana. Daniel's going to have a palace or be in a palace there. In fact, I would say that again. Daniel has a palace in Ecbatana. He doesn't just live in someone else's palace. He's not a king, but he has a royal residence in Ecbatana. He's, like I said, he's going to be an ambassador. Susa, he's going to see some visions in Susa. All right, here is 537. Darius the Mede dies, and Cyrus takes the title of king of Persia. The remnant of Jews returned to Jerusalem, Ezra chapter 2. 70 years since the first captivity. Year 605 to 537 are 68 years in between. So if you count 605 as a year, 537 as a year they got back, you've got 68 years between, and that's 70 years. That's one way of fulfilling Jeremiah's prophecy. 536, an angel comes to Daniel after he has fasted for 3 weeks. And gives him a revelation. We will not have time to talk about this, but an angel comes to Daniel and explains to him 3 chapters worth of prophecy of things that are going to take place. It's detailed. It's king by king, the king of the south and the king of the north. And that's talking about the generals that divide Alexander's kingdom up, and then the generations that come after them, leading up to the Maccabean revolt, all the way up until the time of Christ, and then it continues past the time of Christ and into the end time. So that's great. That's a whole study, chapters 10, 11, and 12. And it's got detail of the Persians and the Greeks, the Maccabeans, and the coming Romans. At this time, Zerubbabel's there. The altar's built in 536, 534. Cyrus gives his son Cambyses the task of preparing an invasion, 530. Cyrus calls Cambyses the king of Babylon, and Cyrus maintains the title king of kings. So at this time, Cambyses is like Darius, the king of Babylon, but Artaxerxes calls himself, Cambyses calls himself the king of kings. There's right here, Cyrus calls himself king of kings. Cyrus dies in 529. There's a few imposters. That's another great story. Daniel's prophecies cover those imposters and who they are. This is Zerubbabel's return. Zerubbabel going from Babylon up through here and returning. They left in March 537. They arrived in June and July of 537. They traveled 900 miles in 4 months. That's when they come back to rebuild the city. The families without genealogies. This is, I've just blown through some stuff. Ezra and Nehemiah both record this. Some people come back and they go, well, we're in the priesthood. We were going to be priests. And they go, well, do you have your records? It said, everything got burnt. And they did. They got burnt when the Babylonians burnt the temple. The genealogy records were burnt. And they say, no records, no priesthood, get a job. And so these people lose their priesthood because they couldn't find their records. And again, some people have the record. So when you look in Matthew and you've got a record of the genealogy of Jesus, beginning with Adam, going all the way up through David, coming through the Babylonian captivity, going through the kings, and then coming out, it's like, that's strange. No, it wasn't, because these people were divided up into tribes, and the priests were the tribe of Levi, and there's different priestly lines, and then they had the Levites, which would be the Levites that served the priests, and then you've got the royal line that's going to be the king and the family of the king, and to lose those records is to lose your connection to your tribe and the prophecies and the inheritance, and what was, in a sense, your title deed because of what was declared in the Mosaic Law. Who would be the priests? Who would be the Levites? Who would be the kings? And there's many other things. And so for them to have their, for example, they lost their records. You're no longer priest. But we do. I still got the priestly stuff. Do you got a record? Well, no, it got burnt. You're out. And they got out. They're out. So that's important. They start bringing down cedar logs from Lebanon, some of which are still on the Temple Mount. Tony and I saw some. They go back to possibly to Solomon's Temple or to this time period, or to Herod's temple. There are still logs there, and that are planks that we could talk about that are still there. The Muslims are trying to burn them as fast as they find them. They've been reused in the Al-Aqsa Mosque right here. The roof of this building right here, roof of this building, has cedar timber, and some of it is stamped with royal stamps from Judea back in this time period, and they've got pictures of it. And one time I was there in 2007, there's a pile over here in this corner of those cedar just. I go, why is there fire on the Temple Mount? And they're burning, the Muslims are burning the evidence of this history. What is this? Land that Ashurbanipal. Oh, this is where the people were deported by Ashurbanipal, the Persians, and now these people are trying to come back from these lands. Ecbatana, location of the citadel in which there, the citadel in which the scroll that issued the rebuilding of the temple was found. Remember, Cyrus in 516 says, in 539 says you can rebuild the temple. So they start going back. The Samaritans stop. They, you can't do this. And no one had, you know, the connections. They didn't have email. So finally, they go back and they find, the king, Darius says, well, go do a search of the records. And they find the record that says the temple could be built in one of Daniel's cities. That's Ezra chapter 6, verse 2. And so they send the paperwork and say they can build the temple. And the Samaritans had to back off, and now the temple gets built. That's 520. Two prophets, Haggai and Zechariah, both appear in 520. August 29th, the word of the Lord comes to Haggai. I'll show you another slide here in just a minute that covers the visions that Haggai has. Zechariah has eight prophecies that occur, and he's got those recorded. Darius, here, in 520, Darius searches the royal archives in Babylon and finds the Cyrus had ordered the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. Opposition from the Samaritans stops. The rebuilding of the temple resumes, and opposition had stopped for 16 years. On December 18th, 520, Haggai prophesies the blessing for having finished the temple. February 15th, 519, in one night, Zechariah is given eight visions. December 7th, Zechariah receives word from the Lord in the fourth year of Darius. In 516, the temple is finally completed. After the records were found in 520, it was completed in 516. And like I showed you, 516 is exactly 70 years after it was burned. So you've seen the 70 years of fulfillment. They were first captivity was in 605. They returned 70 years later. The temple was burnt in 586. They went and came back, and it was built 70 years later, 516. So Jeremiah's prophecy is fulfilled twice. Here we're going to get interesting here. 490, we're making a transition. 490, Darius attacks the Athens. He goes across and attacks Athens. Again, that's over in Greece. By sailing across the Aegean Sea, and I showed you a map a moment ago that showed you that wasn't controlled by, but Darius wants to go get that. They land 20 miles from Athens on the plains of Marathon. The Persians have 600 ships with them and 20,000 men. The Athenians have 10,000 men. A Greek runner finds out that they're here, so he runs 150 miles in 36 hours to Sparta for help. But Sparta does not come. We're not helping. That's where you get, they run a marathon, because he ran 36 hours, 150 miles. So I'm glad that a marathon, I've ran a marathon, I ran many half marathons. I'm glad it's 26 miles and a half marathon's 13. The original marathon running from the plains of Marathon to Sparta was 150 miles. And that record still stands today at 36 hours. But anyway, that's where the whole concept comes from. And Sparta says, we're not coming. The Athenian general then launches an attack, comes down, charging down the hill in formation with a thin middle rank. The Persians break through the middle line, but find themselves trapped. They rush back to their ships. So the Greeks did this on purpose. They had a large group, a bubble on the left, a large bubble, and a thin middle. And they charge, and the first spin that go, the Persians break through the middle of the Greek ranks. And guess what? They go around the side, and they're running down the hill to the boats, and they capture the boats. And the men of the Persians, oh, we ran right through them. It's like, oh, no, and they ran right around us. And so now the Persians are getting beat. The Persians head for the Bay of Athens, but the Athenians outrun them there, and the Persians return home. The Athenians capture seven Persian ships. Casualties suffered. Here's the final score. Persia lost 6,400. The Athenians, 192. Xerxes begins to reign now. So that was Darius. He comes home. That was a losing battle. Xerxes displays his vast wealth. Now, his son, Xerxes, becomes king. And now you're in Esther chapter 1. And you can read Esther chapter 1. He brings all of his leaders in. I'd like to read it to you right now. And shows them all of his weapons. In other words, he's getting ready for war. He's going to go back to Persia and do it a second time. His father tried it and got beat. Xerxes is going to go, and he's going to try it again. And he's got all the, it'd be fun to read Esther chapter 1. And all showing everybody all the treasures and all the weapons and the military, the launchers, the planes, the bombs. They got music, they've got partying, they've got drinking. And when everyone's drunk, that's when he calls for, hey, I want everyone to see how beautiful my wife is. And he calls for her to come out, and she won't come out. And so he divorces her and then goes to battle. And then you can read history and gets crushed. Goes to battle and gets crushed. We'll read it here in just a minute. And then he comes home defeated, humiliated, having caused a lot of damage back in Athens, which Alexander the Great and Philip, his father, are going to decide we'll make him pay. And then realize, wait, I don't have a wife. And so then he's got to have a beauty contest and find out the most beautiful woman. And that's when the Jewish woman Esther is found. And then she becomes the wife of this guy that was defeated by the Persians. So, I mean, the story fits. It's like, well, is that a true story? Yeah, it fits exactly. Okay, that's 483. Xerxes displays his great vast wealth. That's Esther chapter 1. Here's those prophecies that Haggai received right here during the second year, the month that he received it, the day of the month, the modern date. And that's just what Haggai, that would be nice to put that in. If you want to read the book of Haggai, there's your chart that puts that in perspective for you. Zechariah has a lot of visions, but one of the things he sees is he sees the Mount of Olives in the end times split in half and water coming out of the temple. Ezekiel saw it very similar. And water is flowing into the Dead Sea and water is flowing into the Mediterranean Sea from a fountain, which is like the Gihon Springs is still bubbling water up down on this part, down by the city of David. There's water still bubbling out. We're just moving. Something's taking place up here on the Temple Mount, and there's a pool of water, and we could talk about that. I might show you something. But something's going to start bubbling water up out of the ground in the end days after Jesus returns, and that water's going to flow into the Kidron Valley and then all the way down to the Dead Sea and then down out of the bottom of the Dead, because this is the lowest place on earth. But when it fills up with water, it's got to go somewhere. So it's going to go down a canal, down to the Aquaba River, and water's going to flow into the Mediterranean Sea from here, and there's going to be fresh water here. And it's interesting. What did you just see the other day, Tony? They're trying to do something where they're trying to pump water into... into the Dead Sea right now. Now, that's not this, but they are already trying to pump fresh water into the Dead Sea and trying to make some kind of, that way you could have fish living in there. Well, they will eventually, according to this prophecy in Zechariah chapter 14. And that's again, a future event. This is Xerxes' attacks. Now, Xerxes, after he had his big display of all of his weapons and his wife wouldn't come out and whatever she's supposed to dance or perform or, whatever she's supposed to do, and she didn't. Well, he goes to battle up here, and he gets defeated. He comes up here, and there's Thermopylae, and here's the stories about this. That's 481, 480, 479. Xerxes goes to war against the Greeks. Thermopylae, this battle is the base of the movie 300. So that movie 300 is right here. That's the story. Now, do understand, Daniel is still, some verses are still taking place. Esther is still alive. Nehemiah is coming. Ezra is happening. So the Bible is still open during the movie 300. The Bible is still being written. In Salamis, the Persians occupy Athens and burn the temple. So they get into Athens and they burn the temple in Athens. Xerxes sits on his ivory throne placed on a hill and watches, but is surprised that his ships are rammed and outmaneuvered by the Persian ships. And so he's watching from a hill, watching all these things take place, and realizes his ships that he brought are being outmaneuvered by the Persians that are ramming into him. And he has to flee back to Persia, leaving one-third of his troops behind. He says, guys, I got to get out of here, and leaves a third of his troops behind. Well, those troops decide, well, we're back, but we're just going to burn things down, and they burn Athens to the ground. Now, that's going to come back to haunt them, because Philip and Alexandria are going to learn about this in school. They're going to be, that all the bad things the Persians did for them, and they're going to learn about this and take revenge. These three battles fulfill Daniel 11, verse 2, a fourth Persian king, it says. If you remember, I told you 10, 11, and 12 of Daniel are detailed prophecies of kings rising and falling. Well, this is the prophecy, Daniel 11, 2, a fourth Persian king who will be far richer, that's Xerxes, will stir up everyone against the kingdom of the Greeks or the Greeks. It's like, and don't stir him up because you're going to raise up Alexander. Esther goes to Xerxes and becomes queen. That's in 478. Esther's fifth year is 474, 473. This is the story of Haman's plan. Mordecai won't bow down to Haman. Haman tries to get a plan. We're going to kill the Jews in Persia on March 7th. But by the time it comes to pass, the Jews have gotten permission to defend themselves. The Jews kill instead 500 men in Susa, and 10 of Haman's sons are killed. And so that's the story of Esther, where Haman wants to kill the Jews, and they're delivered because of Esther goes in and falls in front of the king on his throne, which is really something you was risky to do. 465, Xerxes is inside his bedchamber and is assassinated. Artaxerxes is also attacked. That's his son, but he kills the people that are attacking him, and Artaxerxes now is going to be the guy that works with Nehemiah. That's 465. Esther would be about 38 years old when she became queen at that time. 38 years old at this time if she became queen when she is 25. So that's just an estimation. 464, Artaxerxes orders the rebuilding of the rebellious city, Jerusalem. See, in 464 it says he orders issues the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. 458, Artaxerxes' 7th year is issued. In Artaxerxes' 7th year, he issues the decree to rebuild and restore Jerusalem. In other words, I want the city built up. It's in my territory. I want it rebuilt like a glorious city like it used to be, like I read in the history books. Well, with the issuing of that decree by Artaxerxes in 458 BC, that's Persian documents, you take 490 years from 458 right here, the 70 weeks or 490 years of Daniel's prophecy in Daniel 9 verse 25 begins with Artaxerxes' decree to restore and rebuild the city. They've given permission to return. They've given permission to rebuild the temple and put up the altar, but they haven't had permission to rebuild the city. Now they're going to rebuild the city. The 70 weeks are interpreted after 69 weeks. Okay, it goes right here. Basically, 483 years equals the year 25 to 26 AD, which is when John the Baptist begins his ministry. So if the 490 years figured out this way puts you right at 25, 26 AD for the coming of the Messiah. If you're talking about when the Messiah came, does he come when he's born? Does he come when he's anointed as the Messiah? Does he come is when he's on the cross and pays for the sins? Does he come when he's resurrected? Is the coming of the Messiah when he ascends into heaven? You've got like five dates. Which one are you going for? This one fits the baptism of John the Baptist when he baptizes him and the Holy Spirit came down on him and says, "This is my son," which would be 490 years after the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. It fits perfectly. And now you're connecting, you're putting a bridge between a Daniel's prophecy during the Babylonian or the Persian Empire, jumping through the Greeks and the Romans all the way into the New Testament through the Maccabean revolt, and it happens in 25 BC or 26 BC. And I think Jesus' ministry began right around 27 BC or AD. AD, I said that wrong. Okay, that's interesting there. Here is Ezra's return. Ezra returns now in Ezra chapter 7. He's recording events 1 through 6, but he's not doing anything. Now he leaves in April 8th, 458. He's going to go back, and Ezra is going to teach the people the law. And he arrives in August of 484. So these are two maps. This is a map I made when I did the class. This is a map I made down in Tulsa in 1987. But nonetheless, when they get everything up and running, got the temple, Ezra gets it, says, we need some priests. We need some scribes. We need some Levites. So he goes over here, and there's a temple, some kind of a temple set up here where the priests congregated. It wasn't the official temple, but it was where the priests kept their things alive. They get the people and bring them up here, and now they come from Babylon to work in Jerusalem. Now remember, do these people speak Hebrew? I mean, are they what are these people? Are they Jews? Well, they're Jews genetically, but they've grown up in Babylon, in Persia, and they speak Persian, Babylonian, Aramaic. They're coming back. You're not bringing Moses back from Babylon. That's that time chart again. Here's another chart. It continues. 446, November, Nehemiah is in Susa. Remember, Nehemiah is now the cupbearer. And he hears in the palace, how are things going in Jerusalem? He hears a report from Jerusalem that the walls of Jerusalem have not been rebuilt. I mean, I thought you're supposed to rebuild the city, the issue of the decree, but it's like, it's too hard. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, who's going to build it? I mean, you don't just hire a construction crew. It's just, there's stones upon stones. It's a garbage dump. And so Nehemiah says, well, we can't fulfill the prophecy unless we get it rebuilt. So August 10th, Nehemiah begins to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. He gets permission from Artaxerxes to go back and rebuild the wall. That's in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1. Opposition to building the wall begins in Nehemiah chapter 4. The Samaritans come out, you're not going to rebuild this. And so then they're going to have to deal with that opposition. October 8th, Ezra reads the law to the public for the first time. October 9th, the people of Jerusalem celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. October 30th, Israel confesses their sins. And then 12 years later, Nehemiah is recalled. Now, what takes place very quickly here, and I've got some things I'm going to show you. Nehemiah, this is Nehemiah chapter 2, when he goes out on a night ride. This will pop up here again. But this is all rubble right here. He starts right here at the valley gate. This is all destroyed. But this is the way it used to lay out. He starts here, comes out from David's palace, where that was now the royal residence where David had lived, and we've seen pictures of that. Comes out the valley gate, comes around here, checking out the wall. Now, there's no wall. Comes down here, when he gets right here, and if you looked at the picture, that's where the Jebusite wall is at, he can't pass. There's so much junk down here in the Kidron Valley, he can't go past, so he has to turn around and come back. And says, okay, we've got our job to do. And what he ends up doing, and you can see this picture here, and I'll just hold it up quick and I'll flash through it. This is where they built the wall. And it goes through the book and tells you the name of the person and who was helping him, and he built from here to here. And they built from their house to this part. And they just build. These are the people that built the wall. It tells you exactly where it was. And when you read it in Nehemiah, it's like, well, it's a bunch of names saying they built from their house, from this to the water gate to this place, to this pillar to that. It's like, well, if you look and you study this, you know where certain places are, and you just know exactly. And if you know where this is and this is, and this guy's building here and this guy's building here, well, then these two guys must be building here. And so you can, this is not like, you know, approved by God himself, but that is my attempt at identifying who built the wall. So now the city of Jerusalem is being rebuilt. There's the silver bowl. This says Artaxerxes' wine bowl, possibly handled by Nehemiah. We don't know that for sure. There's no fingerprints on it. But it says right here, Artaxerxes, king of kings, that's the Persian title in the Bible, and the great king of the world, and that's probably about this big, a silver bowl about that big. There's a whole set of them. I've got video of it. But there's like, I don't know if there's six or eight of them sitting. That's just one. They got the whole set. Those are wine bowls. Now, they didn't drink out of a wine glass. They'd pour for oxidation. They'd pour it in these wine bowls. And you see, like, they would that area get more oxygen, and that's how they flavored their wine or got the oxidation. There it is, like another picture. And you can see the cuneiform writing. See the cuneiform writing right around the edge right there? And that says, Artaxerxes, king of kings, king of the world, something to that effect. Okay. Nehemiah's brother returns to Susa from Judah. He goes over here and gets some support. Nehemiah asks for letters and the return. This is as Nehemiah coming back. This is some cities. This is from Nehemiah's class. Here goes a bunch of Nehemiah. There's all the territories. This is from my Nehemiah class. These are all the countries that the Persian controlled. See, there's Judah, right? See a little bit right there? That's Judah. There's Samaria. Then all these are referred to. Those are how they divided their kingdom. See right here, they try to get over here. They can't get to Marathon and Athens. They've got a little bit of Macedonia there, but that's it. This is Judah broken down. You see there again, Judea, Samaria. This is where the Jews are right here. Edomia, this is Edom. How Edom's come up here, those are Edomites. There's a picture again. There's more detail. We can look at all these things. There's the cities mentioned in the territory of Judah. Some of them are familiar. This is that wall. They came out here. This is where he goes around his night ride. He comes up to try and see. He can't get past here, so he has to go out and around and gets up here on just south of the right where we looked at where Jesus stands on the south of the temple and James. It's a little bit further south here because they extended it. But right about the time you get just from the southeast corner of the Temple Mount, he turns around and comes back. Because he couldn't make it all the way around the city. There's the same picture. There is this is an evaluation of how it takes place, what's left. Babylon had attacked with siege engines from the north, so this wall was all gone. That wall's totally gone. Some of this wall remains. Gates had been left burnt and useless, so there's gates, but they can't be used. Part of this wall right here, it's all gone, but we can still see part of this wall. It's called the wall. Hezekiah showed you pictures of that. Okay, there's Gihon Springs. There's the wall when they're all done. There's some identifying. There's the broad wall is right there. You can still see that right there today. It's right in front of what used to be a gate. And there's that what I showed you. Those are all the people in the spots that they would have rebuilt according to the book of Nehemiah. Too much here. This is the territory. These are some gates right here. They've identified one of those gates. See, there it is again. They found them on this wall right here. That's Hezekiah or Solomon's foundation right there. This gate right here, they have gone in there. They found that gate and gone underneath, and they found a cistern underneath here. This is from Warren's excavation map that Warren drew a long time ago, back in, was it the 1800s when he was under, 1880s? And so this is his map right here when he's drawing all this. That just lays things out. I just did some drawing on that. That's interesting. That's Nehemiah, the dedication of the wall. This is that you read about Nehemiah, then they got done. They went out and they dedicated the wall. So they've got the altar built. They've got the temple built. Now they've got the wall. The city is now protected. Israel is back. The Jews are back. And how do we go through this? They started out right here. Oh, they start a blue dot and a red dot. Part of the people went up on the wall like this and came in this guard of the guard gate right here on the north wall, came in here. The other people came out on the red side right here. They went down on, they're marching on the wall. They got instruments playing. The priests are leading it, playing trumpets. And they come up here and they come in the water gate and come in the, up in here. Now again, Herod, the Hasmoneans are going to extend it, and Herod's going to extend it further. So this would be going up almost where the double gates are. I talked about that yesterday, but further up. Come in the south gate, and they meet right here and have a big celebration. That's the dedication of the wall by Nehemiah. And there it is, a close-up of that right there. 430 to 470. Now this is interesting, how much time I got. High priest in Jerusalem. The high priest fulfills the role. I might just quit with this and start with this next week, because this tells you about who the high priests are and their role, who the scribes are. No one can control the priests, because the priests are going to become the governors. The only way to control the priests are with the Mosaic law. So if you want to control the priest, you've got to become a scribe, a lawyer, and learn the law. So now to control the priest, you become a scribe. You can't do that. It's illegal according to the law of Moses. And so that's a power base. The Jewish people, the view of the Gentiles, the Samaritan division, the language. We'll talk about this all next week. Here's that post right there. This is talking about Philip and Alexander, Philip being assassinated. And this right here is Alexander's march right here. From Alexander was, after his father, well, his father was alive, was sent from Pella, Macedonia, down to Athens. And he was trained. Alexander the Great is born, Philip announces here. Philip's son Alexander becomes this guy, Macedonia. He's educated by Aristotle and memorizes the Iliad by age of 13. So Alexander the Great's homeschool teacher was Aristotle. It's like, that's, now listen to me. That's not in the Bible. That's history. It's like, well, you can't trust anything in the Bible. We're out of the Bible now, folks. The Bible has closed down. We're now into history. Yeah, that, I mean, it's on Wikipedia. That's how true that is. All right. So, but I mean, it's in book. I mean, it's in book. It's in. He was educated by Aristotle. He became the Macedonian ambassador to Athens at the age of 18. His mother was Olympias, who taught him. His ancestor was the Greek god. His mother Olympias taught him that his ancestor was the Greek god Achilles, and his father Philip came from the line of Hercules. Now they believe in the gods. That'd be like saying, you're the Messiah. I mean, he's got that kind of complex. Anyway, well, to pick up that, but I want to show you his journey. When he leaves Pella, he leaves at the age of 18, and he never is going to come back, or 22, and he's never going to come back. He leaves Greece, and he marches through here, and he does this very, very quickly, very quick. Comes down here, conquers Egypt, talks to the high priest, Jaddua, whose name is mentioned in the records in the closing of the Bible. Jaddua's name is mentioned, and Jaddua comes out and meets him with the book of Daniel. Jaddua the priest, whose name is listed and in the line of priests at the end of one of the books, he comes out and opens the book of Daniel, or unscrolls the book of Daniel, and reads to him about the goat crushing the ram, because Persia's just retreating from him because they don't know what to do with him. He just keeps coming, and Jaddua meets him. Now, the Gaza Strip, Gaza, they decided, we're not going to put up with this. And they say, you can't go through our town. You can't go through our territory. And they put their little force up. Alexander just crushed them, just destroyed every one of them. And Jaddua knows this is the goat coming to crush Persia. Daniel said he was coming. And here he comes. Daniel described him as a hero king. He's called a hero king in Daniel. And so they read the scrolls to him and say, you're coming and you're going to be successful. In fact, they read two or three prophecies. It's like, and you're going to be successful. And don't forget us when you're the king. And so he always showed favor to the Jews. And he comes all the way over to here, comes through all these places, and it goes to the east, comes back to Ecbatana, and in, what is it, 323, he comes back and he's exhausted, worn out. There's 333. Exhausted, worn out, 332. and 323. He's 32 years old. He's 32 years old. Alexander was 32, and he conquered the world. And his name is Alexander the Great. Nonetheless, his kingdom is divided up into these generals because he's dead. And there they are, Lysimachus, Antigonus, Seleucus, and Ptolemy. And there they are again, and I got to get to there because there it is. There's Ptolemy the first. That's a 305 coin. Ptolemy the first, the soter. That's the head of Alexander, with an elephant scalp, with horns on it. And there's the backside. There's an eagle, and it says on top, King Ptolemy, right here. Ptolemy King Basileia, right here. Basileia in Greek. See, we're getting better. We don't have to read cuneiform. We don't have to read Hebrew. We got now Greek. We can read that. And this is, you can see the end of Ptolemy right here. And there's an eagle holding a thunderbolt right there. And that coin right here is right here. It's an authentic coin right here. It's, keep an eye on each other. Don't take that out of the case. All right. No, you can take it out of the case and hold it if you want to. I'll pray and we're done. Thank you so much for your patience. We rushed through it, but that kind of covers some things. If you go back and with this information in your book and read those books of Scripture and kind of how they fit together, and I rushed through it all, and it'd be fun to slow down and talk to you for 14 weeks and cover it all. But I'll pray and we're done. Father, we thank you for the opportunity to hear your word. We thank you for the things you preserve for us. And as surely as these things are true and historical, we know the rest of the prophecies and your promises are going to come to pass. And we ask that we would be faithful at this time in history, that we would continue to serve you, that we would look forward to your return and live a life that is pleasing to you as we walk in the light and walk in the truth as you've revealed it to us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your time.